Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This week, Dave is out, and I am joined by Brian Hogg. For those of you who don't know Brian, he is a big player in the WordPress space, and we're going to be talking a little bit about WordPress products, both some of the good and bad and challenges maybe, and a little bit of WordPress business. I think Brian has had some really interesting examples of how things are done right and some lessons learned maybe the hard way lately. So it'd be fun to get into this. So Brian, how you doing?
Good. How are you? Yeah. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, it's my pleasure. Yes. So my very long-winded introduction there, but you want to give folks a bit of a kind of background of who you are and everything?
Sure. I've been developing for, God, I don't even know how many years. Started when I was 12. So that's kind of the background, PHP for many years, and got into WordPress when I took a Joomla extension and converted into WordPress. And so that was in the earlier days where there was much less noise on the plugin repo and everything else. That didn't go so well because they weren't really trying to do it the WordPress way. They were trying to do it almost like a SaaS, like content was being drawn from their server as opposed to from the plugin. So I learned a lot from kind of their mistakes, and later launched some of my own plugins. So they started out free. They stayed free, the first one, for about a year and a half. Didn't really do much with it until people started asking for more and more features. And I kind of thought, you know what, why not add this? I could just add it to the free, but why not just spin up a pro version? And from there, obviously got the initial sales and later took over another plugin, made a pro version of that after kind of fixing up the free and getting support under control, and then launched another one as part of a course to teach people all the lessons I've learned along the way.
So there's a lot there, I think. I guess the first is, and we talked about this previously with Phil Dirksen, the couple of models that you can have with WordPress premium products. So either like a pro version where it's the whole plugin, but just a better premium paid version than what's in the repo. And then a little bit of the model that I think Seriously Simple Podcasting is adopting, which is like the module model.
Yes, or add-ons where, essentially, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we sort of inherited this from Hugh, where he has the core plugin and he has like right now four free modules. We may add like a fifth or sixth free or paid module in the future, plus the kind of SaaS hosting part. But for folks who are looking to get into this kind of, I hate to use the word freemium, but the freemium world of WordPress products.
Yes.
Can tell just the kind of the high level of how you can think about the pluses and minuses of premium versus add-on modules?
Sure. So I actually started with the event calendar newsletter. So that was the first plugin as an add-on to the free. And I encountered a lot of, I didn't really want to split it into individual features. So I just had one kind of pro add-on. I ran into a few issues. One, you have to keep the free plugin in sync with the pro, right? Like mm-hmm. if the pro depends on the free, and especially right around, the WordPress.org free repo has had issues in the past where updates wouldn't go live for, you know, a couple of days at one point. So that can be a technical issue. But also people were finding the pro version directly and were not able to, and then as part of the instructions, you have to go in and install the free version. They're like, oh, I had no idea there was a free version. So, right. In that terms of a business sense, sometimes people would be like, oh, I could just use the free version. That's enough for me, right? So there were some communication issues around that as well. But I've just found that by bundling, I essentially include the free version into the premium version as almost in a folder, and just load it in as I need to, and also run a check to see if they already have the free version installed and then prompt them to deactivate it so they don't have to worry about it. But for me, I just didn't really think of the add-on model just because of the increased marketing and communication overhead, confusion with, okay, do I get this one? Do I get this one? Obviously, you can have a bundle that includes everything, but again, that's just more complexity and more decision-making that needs to be made. So for me, I just found that having just a single premium version, which I do for all of the plugins, is just a lot more beneficial in terms of marketing and also technical maintenance and overhead there.
Yeah, yeah. And all of your plugins are in WordPress.org as well as having a premium version, or do you have any that are only paid?
So ChimpBridge, the MailChimp sending plugin, started as just pro, and then I eventually did a free version as well, but I'm debating actually taking the free version out. It's just not really getting a lot of traction in terms of, I mean, there's a ton of noise when it comes to MailChimp plugins, so yeah. I'm thinking of just marketing it directly for that one.
So let's talk about ChimpBridge a little bit. Can you give folks kind of the backstory, a little bit of kind of where it came from and where it sits today a little bit?
Sure. So it was a plugin that was originally created by Chris Van Patten for some of his clients, but he just wasn't interested in releasing it as a product and, you know, just never did, right? So I took it over, you know, obviously said he can continue to use it with his clients, no problem. And, you know, fixed it up a bit and got it ready for release. And then as part of the, and basically I was looking for a plugin to either create myself or take over to release a new plugin as part of creating the video course on obviously launching a plugin. Mm-hmm. So that was just a great, great fit. So I wasn't as concerned with, you know, a ton of validation behind it and, you know, making sure I had a mailing list of thousands of people before I launched it. Like, I already had the plugin created and it was ready to go. So I basically launched it as part of the course and, you know, didn't do a ton extra with it. Like, obviously spread the word and created a nice, you know, video, introduction video for it, but just didn't do a ton of, you know, direct marketing or marketing push toward it, because really its primary goal was to, you know, launch as part of creating the course. So gotcha. That's kind of the background of it. And at a high level, it just essentially allows you to send to your MailChimp list right from WordPress. So gotcha. You don't have to worry about MailChimp.com, which is nice.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, it's amazing. MailChimp, I don't want to, not to speak ill, but too much, but, no. But it's a great service, but it just amazes me how many steps are involved in sending an email.
Yes.
I use Drip for a lot of my stuff, but I have MailChimp for, like for Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe. I have a MailChimp list and nice. For a couple that are small, but it's like 7 steps to send an email.
Yeah,
and in Drip, it's like 3, I think, and they all make sense. So it's just like, yeah, I think there's definitely a place for what you're trying to do. But from talking a little bit before, the traction's not been as great as you wanted to there. And you touched on a little bit of like the maybe lack of marketing focus. But
for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. So like lessons learned or like maybe if and when you do it again, what specifically did you learn from this not being as successful as you wanted that you would do different?
For sure. I think the days are, and as Syed said in one of the podcasts he's been on, I mean, I think the glory days of WordPress are still here, but the days of just throwing something out there, putting it on the repo and it, you know, gaining traction in a reasonable amount of time. It's been about 6 months since this has launched. You know, maybe later on it might get covered in a blog post and gain some traction, you know, organically itself. But I think the days are gone where you can just throw a plugin in, unless it has a really specific, it's not crowded area for it to just gain traction without you coming up with a marketing plan. So if I was launching it as, you know, if it wasn't as part of the course and it wasn't a plugin that I already created, then I would look to, you know, start blogging about the benefits of, you know, using or sending a MailChimp list quickly or to your MailChimp list quickly within WordPress so that, you know, say you're an agency and your clients don't need to worry about learning MailChimp.com and all that other benefits that come with that. You know, just in other content marketing, build up a list, see if there's any interest. And if there is, great, continue to build the plugin and launch it. If not, maybe shelve it and you know, try a similar strategy with a different idea and see what's out there. Obviously then, and right now I'm just starting outreach directly to WordPress agencies just to see, because I think that's the target market. Like my initial thought was that the target market would be end users, but a lot of them don't even know what MailChimp is. So that's probably not the best idea. It might just be for clients that are setting up a new site for someone else. And, you know, they know that it's a business or individual that wants to build an audience. So they would set up some form of email capture that would add it to their MailChimp list. and then set up a plugin like this that would allow them to send to their list without needing to learn something else. You know, they're already overwhelmed with learning how to create a blog post in WordPress and keep it up to date if they're doing that. So why add something else to the pile, especially when they just want to, you know, maybe just send a quick message just to keep their, you know, people on the mailing list in the loop. So I think, yeah, definitely more validation. And really, that's a huge part of it. And then coming out with either a plan, you know, if it's a premium plugin, then look at Facebook ads, which I am looking into, colleagues have had success with that. Just more traditional content marketing, which, again, is a long play, but at least you can build that up before you spend any time developing a plugin.
Cool. Yeah, we're just getting into running some Facebook ads for Seriously Simple Podcasting and Seriously Simple Hosting, and it's a whole world of hurt if you do it wrong, and even if you do it right, it's just really involved. I mean, targeting and interests and audiences and spend and design and copy and I mean, Dave and I have talked about it a few times on the show that a Facebook ad really captures like 90% of marketing skills all in one little freaking rectangle, right? That you will never really see. I mean, you might not ever see your ad. Yeah, right. I think I'm doing a blog series on kind of building up our campaign. And yeah, I mean, it's involved. I mean, I think that you have to have a product that has a lifetime value that's high enough too. I mean, I think a lot of WordPress products, somebody buys it one time for $50 and that's it. Mm-hmm. And so you can't go spending a whole bunch of money to acquire a customer for $50 LTV. I think that WordPress is a great place to get started with products. And a lot of people talk about this, that like you get yourself involved in an ecosystem so that you know where your customers are and where they're coming from. But I think that as much as you can remove your value from WordPress, remove yourself and the value that your product gives your customers from WordPress, the better you are. So like the more you can kind of SaaSify something or create value independent of how someone thinks about WordPress, the better off you're going to be, because you can charge more, you can charge monthly.
And that's the weird thing, though, charging monthly, right? Because a lot of SaaS businesses would love if, you know, 99% of their customers are doing annual billing, right? Like, because they're getting the money up front, as opposed to $5, $10 a month thing. And then they're putting a ton of support usually up front. There's less commitment on in the terms of the customer spend, right? So more likely that they're either going to just stop altogether or cancel because they're just not as invested. So there are a lot of benefits, I think, with that way, but a lot of communication issues as well, right? Because you're trying to communicate the value of what your plugin does, but then they also need to have the technical savvy that, oh, I have a WordPress site. Oh, I'm able to install plugins, right? Like there's a whole lot of back knowledge that needs to be there as well. And like you said, with Facebook ads, right? Then you got to have the interest to be like, oh, they're interested in WordPress, or do you even need to do that? But they do need to have some knowledge of what WordPress is. You almost need to assume it, because you can't communicate so much in one ad, right? You need to communicate your value, and you can't be like, oh, by the way, it's a WordPress plugin. What is WordPress? It's just maybe what your site is on. I don't know. Right. Yeah. So that can be a challenge.
But. So you touched on something earlier that I think is interesting, that a lot of us wanting to play in the kind of B2B space probably might not think about when it comes to WordPress, and that is selling to agencies or selling to businesses that represent the person who is the end user. It's not the person that you're selling to necessarily. Right. Is this, I guess, how are you identifying agencies, and what is your value proposition for them relative to like what you would, how you would be communicating to an end user?
Well, a lot of it is just so right now I'm just manually going through and compiling a list of agencies and, you know, finding something unique. I'm starting with Canadian based ones just because I'm in Canada, and just, you know, based on where they are, saying, hey, you know, I've either been there, or are you heading to this WordCamp? I'm heading there soon, and just having kind of an icebreaker there. But, and if that, obviously that's not something I would continue to do. If I do find that the conversion is decent, I would obviously bring on a VA or something to to actually help build that list and not have been doing it myself. But the question is just a simple one. Like, you know, does this, I'm just curious, is this something that your clients would be interested in? Like actually being able to, for example, for ChimpBridge, send to to their email list without needing to learn MailChimp. And the ones that have replied, it's been about 30% reply. And they're just like, yeah, like this makes sense. This is something that I would set up. It would probably need to be for new. And that's another issue, I think, with ChimpBridge in terms of the other plugins where it can add value later on. Like even if after they've added a calendar and after they added events, you can still just pop this in. And you know, for the short code plugin I have and for the newsletter, it'll just help you save time, you know, after you've already been using your system. Mm-hmm. But with ChimpBridge, if you've already learned MailChimp, yeah, it's 7 steps and everything else. But if they've already learned MailChimp.com, they don't really need, you know, a plugin within WordPress.
Yeah.
So it is kind of catching them at that early stage. And that's why my thought went to kind of agencies, because, you know, they're likely either in the process of setting up a new site and haven't gotten to the training on MailChimp.com or how that whole thing works, or they're going to be obviously setting up new sites for new clients down the road. So that's kind of the, you know, as you said, increasing the life LTV, you know, it's something where they'd be able to benefit from it now for current clients that they're just wrapping up, and also for new ones. So that's kind of the value prop there.
And you surely could charge more to those folks,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. that is the thought, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So you have another project that you're getting ready to work on. I think this is fascinating because I very much admittedly on this show and talking with our team at Serious Sensible Podcasting, I'm not a developer. I try to wear my marketing hat as much as I can. I get into the code and screw it up every once in a while. But... you are coming at this new project kind of from the other side of it, where you are kind of the technical lead partnering with someone who's a bigger kind of name in the space and has pretty solid marketing chops, it sounds like.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about, as much as you're able to, kind of where that came from, what it's looking like, and how you're approaching a partnership where you have a very specific role? Because I think it's a little unique.
It's been different because, as I said before we started recording, that I've shied away from partnerships for years now, just because there's a lot more communication overhead. Obviously, the business side of things, making sure everything's squared away there. Trust factor is huge, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Especially if you're doing like a 50-50 split, not only do you need to trust that, you know, one person is going to run away with the money or something, but also that each person is doing their share of the work. So it was something that I was hesitant to do at first, but I thought, you know what, this is someone who I know, someone who I trust, someone who I've gotten to know over the last few months. So you know what, let's give it a go. And it said on the technical side, it's not super challenging plugin. It's not something that's released yet. So I won't give the name now, but it's not this, you know, epically challenging, you know, plugin on the technical side. So I'm like, you know what, like, what's the worst that could happen, right? Like we do a bit of technical setup and get the plugin ready. And it's something I could use on my own sites. So worst case, I get a plugin that I can use on my own site, even if it doesn't fully launch. But so like I said, it started because we you know, were kind of part of a mastermind, and he was actually reaching out to other kind of either product owners or want to be product owners to help them launch and improve their own products. So through that, I got to know him quite a bit. And like you said, he's you know, he's built a decent sized mailing list. He spends, you know, 5 figures on Facebook ads daily. So he has a ton of experience in terms of pushing you know, focused advertising out to a large audience. And he knows definitely a lot of his products are higher cost than, you know, a WordPress plugin would be, but he definitely understands the necessity of tracking where your spend is going and that you're getting the conversion ratio that just makes it make sense based on any other expenses that you have marketing and supporting the product. So yeah, so that's kind of how it came to be, and right now we're in the final stages and of getting it ready to launch.
Nice. As you approached kind of getting the partnership, and I say that with air quotes a little bit because it sounds like it's very loosely structured right now. You were talking about like the worst thing that could happen for me is that it's very successful, right? That's like the worst thing that could happen, because then you have what could be like your next 5 years of business. And this guy comes back and says, yeah, you know, Brian, that's great that you wrote the plugin and everything, but I can get like, you know, I can get a guy in the US or in Canada for $100 an hour to write, or I can get a guy in Ukraine for $30 an hour to write it.
Sure.
Fuck off, right? Like, and you would be sitting there saying, okay.
Oh, that's
right?
Because, cool.
I mean, it sounds like, well, you might have learned this with ChimpBridge, right? The hard part is selling something and marketing it. The easy part probably is building it. Not that what you're doing isn't difficult and takes a lot of time, but more people could build something than could sell something. So from your perspective, how are you thinking about kind of protecting yourself, and what have you done kind of that to this point, other than, you know, kind of this is what our agreement is, you know, loosely, you have anything on in writing or even an email to kind of lay it all out just so the expectations are set?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I would never even think, because even if you have a formal agreement, there is always a way that someone could figure out how to screw you over, right? Yeah. Like, there's just, the trust needs to be there. And that's just why I shied away with it for so long. But he put it in good words. It's like, look, I'm well known. You're pretty well known. Neither of us are going to tarnish our relationship over one project, and our reputations over one project. I'm like, totally agree. We're definitely not going to do that. And on the marketing side, it would be way more complex for him to do the initial marketing push if he didn't already have an existing kind of established audience that he can market to. If we were building this up from scratch, then you're right. I mean, it would be like, you know, 90% of the work would be, you know, blogging about it and building up that initial content marketing and getting everything out the door. But again, because I, you know, have the experience to roll out a plugin pretty quickly, and he's got the established audience to do at least the initial marketing push to, you know, it's a pretty decent split in terms of the work, at least at first. And he's got other projects that he wants to kind of work on after, you know, about the first year. So our loose agreement is that we'd be doing, you know, it basically if it actually is successful as we're hoping it will be, and reaches a certain threshold in terms of revenue, then we would look to, you know, establish a formal company of some kind, either in his country or mine, and, you know, cement the, you know, have some kind of formal business entity around it. Mm-hmm. But before that, I mean, we're basically just, you know, I'll invoice him or he'll invoice me, depending on which payment credentials we use, our share, and, you know, just send it off that way, at least at first. And, but yeah, no, once the plugin is launched, then after the first year, his thought is to back away and cut his percentage to, you know, 15. Mine would be 85, and I would just continue to run it from there, which again was another appealing factor where, you know, because again, if it does establish its own traction, and especially if I'm marketing to the existing, you know, I could just continue to market to the existing customers. So then it becomes, okay, what is he going to be doing in terms of, you know, continuing to market and grow the product. So yeah, that's kind of our loose agreement and relationship right now. And I'm excited to see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So that's, I mean, I think in a lot of this online world, and especially in multiple countries where you have different governing laws, it's really difficult to enforce a lot of these things. I particularly think about this with like buying and selling digital assets, that like you can have all the contracts you want, but if somebody lives in another country, chances of you, you know, especially for what we're all talking about are relatively small dollars, chances of you actually getting something done in the legal system is pretty low. But
oh yeah, if it's less than 40,000, it's just not even worth it. Your legal expense is going to be higher than that. So
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's just how it works.
No, yeah, I totally. I mean, I bought Seriously Simple Podcasting just on a handful of emails and sent a PayPal over to Hugh, and it, you know, it was a little bit of a risk, but kind of like you're saying, I knew him through people I know and trust. And from there, like my risk tolerance was pretty decent based on that and him having a good name in the space and everything. But I think
I hope that he had similar thoughts for you as well. Yeah. You know, especially with some recent developments of plugins being purchased and then malicious code being inserted. The trust goes both ways. So I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So how do you feel about, because for your other products, you've been the one man show, right? You've been the creator and the marketer and the business owner and everything, with kind of having a very specific role here in this new project. How do you feel about that, you know, relative to kind of being a one-man show?
I think part of it is the communication overhead, like I said, especially because he's in Asian time zone. So basically, we're communicating. If I get up at 6:30 a.m. my time, he's kind of wrapping up for the day. And then if I'm happen to be on in the evening, then we can kind of exchange a few messages in real time then. But otherwise, there's very little overlap in terms of real time communication. So we've been just focused on using a Trello board to kind of track what needs to be done. But like I said, I mean, we both got other projects that we're kind of working on at the same time. So part of the not, I guess I would say frustration, but that it would be launched probably by now, you know, I would be making all the decisions. Whereas right now, you know, we need to kind of debate, okay, like he's pretty adamant about not doing a recurring billing, where I'm like, you know what, the WordPress space is kind of moving that way. Yeah. I have it set up for all of my plugins, and as a long-term benefit, having that recurring billing. But his view is that a lot of people would just want to have the one-time payment. We're making it clear that it's for a year of support and updates, but you know, his view, at least initially, and for his audience, that they wouldn't want to be signed up automatically to a recurring, billing payment structure, right? So that's that was definitely a lot of debate there, because my thought is that, like you said, if it's successful and it ends up being a 5-year venture, I don't want to be dealing with a 16% or less renewal rate on manual renewals versus the automatic. So, right. And then part of it as well is, like you said, it's different countries, right? So he's in the Asian country, I'm in Canadian. The laws here for charging sales tax are pain in the butt. You have to collect like the full address, whereas he's used to using something like Simple Goods to just, have a really quick one-click modal pop-up that gives you, just credit card number and email address at a minimum. So setting that up, and I just wrote an article on setting that up, because I still want to use Easy Digital Download software licensing, but he really wanted to use one of these kind of one click, modal pop-up plugins. So integrating the two was an extra challenge that I didn't think of, but I'm excited to see how that might affect conversion rates versus, I guess I can't really compare between the old, but yeah, it'll be a nice buying experience at least, and renewal experience, right? Like the renewal experience is a pain in the butt for most people right now, where you have to remember the license key, you have to remember your account. Mm-hmm. Whereas with this, you could just go in, pop in your payment information again to renew, and boom, you've got it, and just have the license key maybe as part of the renewal email, and away it goes. So yeah, definitely some challenges on communication, especially with the time zones and, decisions that I would think differently. He's like, I know my audience, this is how I want to do it. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you don't really know until you launch and learn from it. So
yeah, especially we'll interesting because it is his audience, but it sounds like it will be your product ultimately through kind of like this vesting time. But it's as someone who has inherited the way some things were done before, I would feel pretty strongly about having things my way if this was going to be my baby long term.
Once he drops down to 15%, I'll be like, well, we're adding recurring payments now, and
automatically signing everyone up and everything. Yeah,
and even after the initial launch, it's just what he wants to do, with his initial audience. But then when we're starting, with Facebook ads, like you said, the LTV, if it's just that one time payment, becomes a lot harder to justify the expense of getting those conversions. But if you have that automatic recurring payment with those customers, then now your LTV goes up quite a bit. So I'm just like, let's try this for the initial. Plugins like MailChimp for WordPress didn't have recurring until very recently, and they were they did fine. They're doing fine now, right? So it's not necessarily the end of the world to do, but yeah, excited to see how it goes.
Nice. And so you touched on it a couple of times. You've recently released a course on building and launching premium WordPress plugins. You want to talk a little bit about that and the experience of it?
Sure. So it took a while to wrap my head around whether I should even do it or not, because yes, I have experience. Yeah, I've gotten a decent amount of sales with plugins, but I'm not Pippin. I'm not, you know, any of these huge names in the WordPress space that, you know, are very well known for creating, launching, and monetizing plugins. So I was thankful to have a good group, you know, in a mastermind and elsewhere that were just like, no, like, you've done it. You've done it more recently, right? You've done it in the last year and a bit, 2 years. So it's a lot fresher in your mind. You're aware of, you know, maybe best practices that and other techniques that someone who's been doing it for 5+ years might not think to do or hasn't done with their own plugin. So I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. But essentially the plugin or the course it's a video course, you know, purchase it one time, and it's just to teach you how to launch and different techniques to grow the plugin sales. So it definitely saves a lot of time thinking about what platform you should use, if you have a free and a pro version, how you should set up the code structure. So there is some technical nature. It's not about building a plugin. Like you need to have a plugin or know how to create a plugin. That'll be a separate course that I'm planning. But you know, essentially, how to structure the code and maintain it so it's easy to release new versions of both the free and the pro, and then just grow it over time. So yeah, I had some great feedback from it. A lot of people who either were part of the beta or got access to it beforehand, who, you know, have already learned the hard way a lot of it, were like, I wish this course was around 2 years ago before I started. Yeah. So yeah, that I would be able to learn from it then. But yeah, it's great to see people launching plugins and getting value out of it.
I think you touched on something really important there, I think, is that the closer you are to the experience that you're teaching on, the better you are at communicating and connecting with your audience, or your students in this case, I think. Yes. You know, I mean, like this blog post series I'm writing about Facebook ads, I know, I would say, a decent amount about Facebook ads, but I think that someone who's just getting into Facebook ads would get a ton out of this series that I'm writing right now. Similarly, yeah, I went through your course as someone who's just getting into premium plugins and monetizing in WordPress. It was really good for me because I'm, let's say, one or two steps behind you, whereas I'm 19 steps behind, you know, Pippin and Brad Sinard and all these, right, these guys that have, yes, huge companies. I mean, literally, those two, yeah, companies are dozens of people, tens.
No, exactly. Know, people. And that's a really good point where, I mean, you're aiming to keep this small, right? Like you have, you're not looking to have a team of 15 people as well, right? Like, I'm assuming.
Right. No, yeah. No, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in the same boat where, yeah, there's a lot of techniques that would be very different if you have to worry about the overhead of a salary of 10, 15, 20 people or more versus something where, you know, you can afford to experiment more and try different things because, you know, you're not supporting 5 people, 10 people on your team that you need to, you know, doesn't matter, you know, come hell or high, you have to pay their salary each and every month. So, yeah, it's definitely an experience that I hope resonates with a lot of people who want to keep it small, you know, more of a lifestyle business as opposed to something where you're, you know, building out teams of people, because I have zero interest in doing that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as you know, we have a good sized team with Podcast Motor, and there is an enormous amount of stress in paying those people every 2 weeks. Whatever, yeah, twice a month. I mean, and you know, now with Serious and Simple Podcasting, we have two guys we're looking, that are both part-time, looking at a third potentially part-time to help with some support. Mm-hmm. And so I already kind of see myself getting into it, but just because, I mean, I'm not a developer, so I can't do that. I, sure, can do a lot of the other stuff, but I also see, like, if I can pay someone $20 an hour to do support and I can go market and get more customers for more than $20 an hour, then that's what I should do.
Absolutely.
And it's a tough thing to get your head around. And like with Podcast Motor, it was a little easier because we already had the revenue to kind of necessitate those other people. And now I'm kind of looking at this and saying, like, this is an investment in the future of the business. If I can free myself up to come up with these kind of elaborate Facebook ads funnels, right? And email, mm-hmm, marketing and retargeting and all this stuff that you can't just like have 30 minutes in the evening and go do it, right? It's got to be like, no, I'm going to go somewhere for like a half a day and just think about this stuff, and the customer journey and all these kind of higher level things, like where's the product going and what does product market fit look like for us? I think if this is a huge tangent, but if you can't step away from from actually doing work, then you're going to have a hard time pulling a lot of these more complex cerebral things off.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And I advocate that if, a lot of people get afraid of support because they think, oh, support, like it's just people with issues that I have to deal with. It's like, no, you get the feedback and product requests, feature requests that will make your product better ultimately. But I do mention in the course for sure that, you know, there are services like Kyle Brown's WP SaaS support as a service that's specifically for WordPress products that, you know, he's able to come in, deal with a lot of these tier one support issues and you know, better organize your support and help you grow that way. And then organize your requests so that you can just drop in every once in a while and do feature requests. I've slogged through some of the initial support stuff, which wasn't too bad. The documentation has got gotten better and better as support requests come in. But if it ever got to the point where it was more than like a couple requests per day, then yeah, I would definitely look at, I mean, similar to how I've hired an accountant and a bookkeeper and stuff that I totally could be doing myself, but yeah. It just doesn't make any sense, right? So yeah, no, I'm definitely not thinking to not bring in, you know, contract and ad hoc, support help and other help, but design help as well, right? Like nobody wants me near Photoshop. That would be terrible. but that would be like a specific task that someone could be subcontracted or part-time to do. But just growing a team in terms of like developer and rolling out new products to bring in more revenue to support more people. That's just kind of where I don't want to really get into. So.
Yep. Yep. No, for sure. For sure. Cool. Well, I'm going to have a series of a couple questions and maybe should have done this at the beginning so people can kind of get to know you a little bit better, but some things about you and your business and kind of like what you enjoy doing and everything. But talking about support, this kind of brought it to mind. What tool do you use for managing support?
Help Scout right now.
Okay.
Which I've been very happy with. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. We've used Help Scout for a long time. We just switched to Intercom, which adds a lot of chat and automated in-app messaging, which for us, yes, with kind of like the SaaS aspect, has been really powerful, actually. So I think Help Scout is a far superior email management tool to yep. Intercom. Intercom is like a glorified chat tool. So for email, it is, for me, pretty difficult to manage. But we get 10 or 15 emails a day.
So have you found the live chat aspect? Because I did add Drift on the site for a while,
yeah.
And while I did get a few, you know, decent requests and everything else, a lot of people were just skipping the normal support mechanism completely, and then using that and almost just being very demanding and you know, having it to be real. I think there are other like Intercom that will communicate better that it's not super real time, even though Drift did. Have you found it helpful increasing sales and communication?
Right. So I think if you got to look at it a little differently, right? So Drift, first of all, Drift is a sales tool. It's not a support tool, right?
Yes.
OLARC is like a chat tool, right? Intercom is like an automated tool to manage inbound leads, is the way I look at it, right? So Intercom's goal is to talk to people on specific pages about what they're doing. So you can set up like, oh, if you're on the documentation page, ask them a question about, hey, did you have a question about XYZ? And whenever they type it in, they have this thing called operator, which says, oh, it looks like you're looking for a way to customize the short quote. Here's the article, right? So in that way, it should reduce or streamline your support requests, right? It also funnels all of your kind of live in-app messages in with your email. So you can have a conversation with someone in multiple ways. So if you come to and hit my Intercom thing, it says, hey, they're not here because it's 2 o'clock in the morning, leave your email. And then I can respond in Intercom and it will ping back in the browser and in someone's email.
Correct. Which Drift does do. It'll send, if they put in their email address, like right after they send the first question, and ask for their name and email address.
Yeah.
But it is a little clunky in that way where, I think some people weren't getting the email. Like they literally, within the span of a week, I think I discovered two bugs with the platform, which I'm thinking they fixed, but email notifications was one of them. So a lot of times they weren't getting it at all. So that sounds like a great tool.
Yeah, I mean, so I think overall, it's been about a week. We see less email, but more engagement, which is just good. I mean, engagement, both on the support aspect and on selling and pre-selling. So the way I look at it is the more people that we're talking to, the better. Because we have things like feature requests that we probably never would have heard from people who just kind of drive by and say, hey, how do I XYZ? And I go, you can't. And they say, oh, exactly. Okay, I'll go look at, you know, whatever, Simplecast.
Yep.
And I go, well, shit, I need to fix that. So, yeah, I think it is definitely adding some overhead to the amount of work we do. But I think it's, if we can automate it some and manage it better, it will make the velocity of the business increase. Yeah.
Good stuff. Cool. Yeah. Sounds like a great tool.
Cool. Podcasts. What, like a handful of podcasts that you listen to?
Good question. Lately,
One, of course.
Right? Of course. Yeah. Actually, this is the only one that I listen to. I got to open up my podcast thing. Actually, to be honest, a lot of what I listen to is to get it, because I'm constantly reading and you know, I'm part of three masterminds and everything else. So while I enjoy listening to, obviously, podcasts like yours, which are a lot more engaging than, say, a musical podcast, I do tend to listen to musical podcasts quite a bit. So cool. I'm an electronic music fan. So Above and Beyond, The Hot List with Aruna, Morgan Page's podcast. So those are hour to 2 hour long shows. So yeah, that tends to, and the time I listen to podcasts tends to be while I'm driving. So I don't drive a ton these days. So yeah, those tend to jump out. But yeah, I don't know, the How I Built It podcast has been good. Carrie Dills's The Office Hours has had a lot of great episodes in terms of WordPress. The Matt Report. So those in the WordPress space have been awesome. And actually, the Startup Chat is probably one of my favorites. They're very short. They're like 20 minutes ish max.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's with Stilly and Heaton Shaw, Kissmetrics. So that one's just amazing podcast where he talks about everything from, you know, getting that first sale, whether it's a SaaS product or other thing, right? Just ask for the credit card. Life issues, right? There's a lot of great episodes in there that that they chat through. So highly recommend Startup Chat.
Cool. Yep. Been a customer of Podcast Motor for a long time, and they're wonderful guys. Yep.
There you go. If they weren't, would you say they were wonderful?
No. Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, they really are wonderful guys, for sure. I'm going to see Stelly next week, actually. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I chatted with him. He did a promotion, actually, to get more reviews. Did, you know, a 15-minute chat with him while I was at another conference. I just grabbed 15 minutes with him. He's, yeah, super great guy.
Cool. And last question, favorite software tool that you use?
I guess for development, PHP Storm. That's been, and I've been switched from Vagrant, which was just like VVV and Vagrant for local development, to Local by Flywheel, and I've been loving it. The speed of both loading the virtual machine and working on WordPress sites and spinning up a new one just to test with quickly is just been nice. You know, even though I can do it on the command line, it's a lot nicer to be using a GUI. And PHP Storm, I heard about it like WordCamp Toronto when I first got into WordPress space, and so happy I did, because I was using Zend's, I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, their IDE, which, you know, if you're using it for more than an hour or two, it starts to slow down, eat up all your memory, and super expensive to boot compared to PHP Storm, and their support's been great. So
awesome. Yeah. Cool. So Brian, can you share with folks where they can learn more about you, check out your course and your products and everything?
Yep. So everything's linked from brianhogg.com. So that's BRIANHOGG, not Hogg or Hoag, like a lot of people are saying. But brianhogg.com will have pretty much everything. The course is at makingproplugins.com. One of the plugins is eventcalendarnewsletter.com. I'm very literal with the domain name choices and product name choices. And chimpridge.com is at chimpridge.com. So, or chimpridge is at chimpridge.com. But yeah, brianhogg.com is definitely the best place to go.
Awesome. Brian, thanks so much for your time and coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Likewise. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.